within that vertical is talking about your brand or your product or your service as someone they trust and something someone that's really added value to their business, and that you're gonna be there for the long term. Not that,
Yeah.
you know, you're not just gonna say, hi, give me your money and go. It's like, no, you wanna help build value over a long period of time in that community.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we reimagine and redefine sales in a digital world. In this new series, we have absolutely scoured the world to bring you only the best of the very best. We will be working with each of the thought leaders to unpack all of their years of experience, their pearls of wisdom, and nuggets of gold into bite-sized chunks that will enable you to redefine your sales. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. I'm Abby White. If we have not met before, I am the host of the Redefining Sales Podcast and CEO of Sales Redefined. In this podcast, we unpack everything about sales, marketing, leadership, hypergrowth. And that is exactly what we're going to be tapping into today with Adam Furness, who is Managing Director of Impact.com for the APAC region. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about Adam and a little bit about Impact.com in a moment. Before I do, some of what you can expect to hear in this conversation. Firstly, we start by unpacking partnerships. What does it take to build a successful, long-lasting partnership? What are some of the keys to success? And this is an area that Adam has a lot of expertise in. We then talk about how do you have a hypergrowth journey and what are some of the keys to success? Impact.com went from 4 employees to 80 employees in just 4 years, and we unpack some of those key factors for success. We then talk about the high-performing team that it takes to get that hypergrowth journey and what are some of the keys to building that high-performance team. We talk about what's working today for sales and marketing and what's working in content today. And there are honestly some really fantastic nuggets of gold in that piece of the conversation. And then we go into some of Adam's non-negotiables, some of his learning, some of what gets him playing on his A game. This honestly was really a fantastic conversation. I have pages and pages and pages of notes from things that Adam shared that I want to look into and that I want to jump on board and embrace myself in our business. So before we dive into the conversation, let me share with you a little bit of Adam's bio and a little bit about him to give you that background. So Adam has been working in media and advertising for nearly 20 years. He has experience across radio, TV, and digital media. He's got a passion for tech-based startups, as you can see with Impact.com, and has held senior leadership roles in sales, strategy, business development, and cross-platform media at Southern Cross Stereo, Macquarie Radio Network, and M19, which was formerly 9MSN, a joint venture with Microsoft, and Rhythm One. So quite the extensive experience there. He joined Impact.com in 2018 as their managing director for the APAC region. And as I mentioned before, has grown the team from 4 to 80 in just 4 years. And that included international expansion in China and Japan. So get ready, grab your cup of coffee, and listen to the pearls of wisdom from Adam Furness in this conversation. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. Today we have the amazing Adam Furness from Impact.com. Adam, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you here.
Abby, thank you for having me.
I was just saying to Adam before we went live, my team got really excited about Adam coming on. So I feel like there's been such a build up to this conversation. So I'm super excited for today. Thank you.
Are you making me nervous now, Abby? Come on.
I was nervous. The pressure. I was getting like, you know, all this hype and this like, we're so excited about Adam. We think he's going to be great. So yeah, the pressure's on both of us now.
Got it. Okay.
Let's dive in. So look, for anyone who hasn't come across Impact.com, I would love to start there and for you to fill in the blanks and tell us a little bit about Impact.com and what you guys are all about.
Yeah, it's probably a good place to start, isn't it? Okay, so we at Impact.com, we provide a method of acquisition that doesn't involve, I guess, advertising or sales. We call that partnerships. So we're not A lot of people think about partnerships, they think about reseller agreements. But when we're talking about partnerships, we mean partnerships with influencers, cashback coupon sites, loyalty businesses, brand-to-brand partnerships, content commerce, which is like working with major content publishers. And the reason, you know, partnerships are really important right now is the modern consumer, that's you and I, Abby, we don't really like ads, right? We don't believe in brand messaging. So what we're doing is we're spending our time researching online before we make purchases. We're spending our time talking to family and friends and following influencers. And we're really looking for what other people are saying about brands, products and services. You know, we may be on Forbes or BuzzFeed or Pedestrian or news.com and doing a lot of the research ourselves. So it's really important for marketers and brands to be where these consumers are seeking the information. And that's where impact.com provides, you know, a really robust kind of piece, I guess, is that that's what we provide. We provide a marketplace where you can discover and recruit partners. We have contracting technology where you can send over T's and C's. There's payment capacity. And we have all the optimizing, reporting and everything you need when you manage and scale partnerships all in one place. So that's kind of what we do.
That's awesome. And it's funny, I laughed when you said we don't like ads. I've got a three-year-old and you have never seen a three-year-old lose their mind as much as when suddenly an advert comes on because he's not used to it and he like loses his mind. And it's like that generation have got zero tolerance of or understanding of what an ad is. Like I'm terrified of it.
This is true. Watch out though. I've got an 11-year-old and 14-year-old. He's going to get on TikTok. He's going to get on like Snapchat and all this sort of stuff. And he'll be watching things, but he won't realize they're ads until, start purchasing, you'll see it come through on your credit card. That's what happens.
Oh gosh, you're making me scared now. I want to tap actually back into what you were just saying around their influencers, if I can, because a lot of our clients are in the B2B space. And I think there's a perception that it's starting to change, I feel. But there's a perception that actually the influencer space is more B2C. And I think people's minds instantly go Kim Kardashian and that kind of avenue. Whereas actually I've seen some of the IT companies that we've worked with before have actually had successful relationships with influencers and influencers of all different disguises. Some of that's their partnership ecosystem and some of the influence they have. Some of it's beyond that into the celebrity. I've seen that work. Can you talk to us about how that's worked in B2B context?
Yeah, well, I think, influencer now, starting to talk about influencers as content creators. So if you think about that B2B space and you think about who in your networks can create content and create advocacy around your brand, product or service, and then you can start kind of defining who may be an influencer. We use this term kind of influencer, but think of it from a content creator perspective, an advocate perspective. They may be someone that's writing material about your brand, product or service. They have an audience. That audience, follows them, they listen, they trust what they've got to say. So then they, really have the ability to influence that audience, which is where this kind of influencer term comes from. You talk about celebrity influencers. Well, I think the thing about celebrity influencers is what we're finding is maybe they're not as authentic as someone that has a smaller following, but a more engaged and a more loyal and a more trusted kind of following. And I think in the business space, that's, if you can tap into that, that's really, really powerful.
Yeah, I completely agree on that, actually. So you've got a huge amount of experience in your background as well, all around partnerships and so on. What do you think are, and obviously, as you've mentioned, there's different kinds of partnerships, but what do you think are some of the keys to success for building that wildly successful partnership and having longevity in it? Because there's so many partnerships that just don't work and, maybe people are on different pages from the get-go and just sort of fall out of bed with each other. So how do you have, the happy partnership and the successful partnership that gets the outcomes you want?
Yeah, well, I wish I knew how to have the happy partnership every time. I think, sometimes partnerships, it's the ability to go through the ups and downs, which really makes the partnership. But I'd say there's probably, three, four, five things. I think it would probably start with aligning on what success looks like. So agreeing upfront, what does that successful partnership look like? I think that's got to be number one. And then thinking about the win-win-win. So in a partnership, there's normally not just two parties, particularly in the type of partnerships we do. You'd have a brand, you'd have kind of this media partner, and you'd have a a consumer, I hate actually saying consumer, but let's say consumer, a person. So there's kind of these three different parties. And in that relationship, there needs to be a win-win-win. So the brand needs to win, that media partner needs to win, and the consumer needs to win. So the brand needs to win. Maybe they get a new customer. The media partner needs to win in that they get paid for bringing that customer. And the customer needs to win in that they get a great service or some kind of value exchange. So it needs to be a win-win-win. So I'd say that's probably number two, test and learn, right? Like with partnerships, doesn't always work. Test things, learn, apply those learnings. I think that's important. Trust has got to be up there as well. Like you've got to trust your partners, particularly when you've got to go through some challenging times. Sometimes things don't work. You've got to have that trust. And I think be brave, like try to do some interesting things. And I think maybe, yeah, what was that? That's five things there. But, hopefully that's of value.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting because I think, you mentioned about the trust there. And I think that's so, it's overused as a word, but it's actually the foundation and is actually so pivotal because a lot of the partnerships we look at, there's actually distrust there from the get-go of, oh, actually, are they going to cheat on me, so to speak, or just anything. There's actually not that foundation there of trust. And I do agree with you that whilst it might be an overused term of we build trusted partnerships, it's actually so fundamental to get that in the first place. Otherwise, it's not really destined for success.
100%, Abby. And I think once again, if I just go back on something I said previously, which is around getting through the tough times as well. So in every long partnership, if you have a partnership, you kind of want it. You should be going into a partnership thinking about how do we work with each other in the long term. You're going to go through ups and downs, and I think the best partnerships are those ones that can get through the downs and come out and still have respect for each other. So that's being able to have open, honest, transparent, and sometimes really tough conversations. And I think that's really makes the difference between a superficial partnership and something which is a lot deeper, is being able to have those conversations, go to places that are really uncomfortable, and then get through it together.
Yeah, I love that. I really love that. There was a key vendor in IT, and obviously we do a lot in IT, that really looked at when COVID hit, how do we support our partners during this time? How do we change the payment terms to make sure that actually it's really flexible for them right now? How do we make sure that we have empathy? How are we showing up and how are we being remembered during this time? And they really coached a lot of their partner teams around that. And I think that that's kind of quite well remembered now, because it's kind of like, how did you turn up when the you-know-what hit the fan during COVID? And so I think that's a really interesting example you used.
100%. Couldn't agree more. And the you-know-what hit the fan quite a fair bit, right? So it was those that sort of stuck with you when the you-know-what hit the fan that you remember. Yeah. So, I couldn't agree with you more there, Abby.
Totally. So I'm really curious about Impact.com, going back to you guys. You've had a massive, insane growth journey of, I think it was, you went from 4 people to over 80 in 4 years, including expansion into China, Japan. That is one hell of a 4 years. Huge question, but what would you, and you still look sane, I'm impressed by that. What would you say have been some of your keys to that hyper growth? If you had to narrow down and look back on that 4 years and go, wow, that's a journey, what were some of the keys to the hyper growth that you achieved?
Yeah, wow. I still look sane, is that what you're saying, really? Okay, well, that's good.
I'm still disguising. Look sane. That was my version of a compliment.
I'm disguising that. I think the first thing is right people, right seats. Okay, so that's finding the right people and putting them in the right jobs. I think that's got to be kind of the core thing there. Setting directional objectives. So where are we going to go directionally as an organization? And then setting some key results on being able to kind of measure that direction. I think that's also really important. And then having a very supportive global business. I think those are probably the three key areas. But I'd say the number one thing, and I'll always come back to this, is the right people. I mean, I don't speak Chinese, right? So we've got a general manager for Greater China. Jennifer Zhang is her name. She's fantastic. And if I didn't have Jennifer, I don't know what I'd be doing in China, because I can't speak Chinese. In fact, I can't even go to China at the moment. If I go to China, I'd have to quarantine for 3 weeks. How do we grow business out of China if it was only me? So I've got the right person in that role, and each of those roles in our marketing or in our different kind of markets or in our operations or our customer success or sales, those leaders that drive those areas are so important. So right people, right seats has to be the number one thing. And I say directional objectives because I think sometimes you can get caught up on being really, really specific. We need to reach this by this time. And something I've learned along the way is that that doesn't always happen. So as long as you're directionally aligned, as long as you've got directional objectives of where you're going and you're looking at those objectives regularly and you're changing them based on market conditions, that's a good way to operate a hyper growth company in my view.
Mm. And I'm interested, sort of putting you on the spot with this one, I'm interested as well from a customer perspective. Obviously, something that you guys are doing is really resonating and really hitting the right chord. So you can have the right people, you can have the right sort of objectives, you can have all that sort of stuff. But it's also, you know, obviously what impact.com are doing is clearly delivering for clients and clearly like hitting the right chord. So what is it from a customer perspective that's just really hit that right note? I'm really curious to connect that level hyper growth. There's something there that's just absolutely clicked into place from a customer perspective. Does that make sense where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things we talk about irrational love. Okay, so irrational love for customers, and I actually view my customers as my people. So the people that work at impact.com, internal stakeholders, advertisers, brands, agencies, external stakeholders. So I kind of view everyone that I kind of interact with as a customer. So I talk about irrational customer love. So what does that mean? That means for our people don't want to work anywhere else. They want to work at Impact. What does it mean for our customers? Well, when we bring a customer on board, they don't want to go anywhere else. They want to work with Impact. And then it becomes a case of, well, how do you create that irrational love? And my view on that is it's not just, you know, over-delivering on brand, product, service, and what you say you're going to do. It has to be something else. It has to be a way that you connect. You have to connect on an emotional level, not just a rational level. You have to really understand them as humans, as people that you're actually working with, and what are they trying to achieve in their worlds, and then how can you help them facilitate that? You need to be able to have the tough conversations, accept feedback and apply that feedback, and be open that you're imperfect and you're going to hear things that you're not always going to want to hear, but take that on and apply that and just do that consistently and unrelentingly day in, day out over a period of time. And I think playing the long game is really important there. So it's like thinking about, and you touched on before around COVID and where some businesses didn't really make the right decisions in COVID by their customers, but those that did had probably had those customers today, and those customers really, really think favorably about those businesses for doing the right thing. But it's doing that consistently and doing that unrelentingly day in, day out, and thinking about the long term.
Yep.
That was a long-winded answer to your question, but it all boils back to irrational love for me.
I love that. I wrote that down. I'm like, that is so cool. Irrational customer love and thinking of everyone as your customer, including internally. I really like that concept. That's a really good one. I'm going to borrow that.
Write a book on it. And when you do, make sure you pay me a royalty, right? Irrational love.
Damn, we're recording when you said it. We've got evidence. I really like that. I really like that. That makes a lot of sense to me. So you've talked quite a lot there about the team and obviously getting the right people. So, you know, to go on that growth journey, like I said, you know, 4 to 80 people and the massive growth you've gone through, there also has to be, you know, how do you build that high performing team that can handle that pace, can handle that pressure, can handle that level of growth, because there's a lot in that. And you've talked about getting the right people. So what is it for you that kind of makes that high performing team? And can we sort of dig into that area a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm going to say it again, right people, right seats. So that has to be at the core. Yep. But then I think it's around that, what surrounds that is a culture of feedback and constant learning. So we view at impact.com, we view feedback as a gift. And one of the things that we say, it's a bit of a mantra, I guess, particularly in APAC, is the reason we're going to win is because we're going to learn quicker than everyone else. And by definition, I think if you learn quicker than everyone else, you're going to win. So you learn, you apply those learnings, and you just do it consistently and unrelentingly. So we have different frameworks where we make sure that we're able to kind of capture these areas. You know, what are we doing well? What aren't we doing so well? What should we do better? How can we do better? We, you know, we've got Gong as a sales tool as well. So we listen to sales calls. We provide feedback to our salespeople. You know, we do 360 degree kind of feedback for our leadership team. We do what we call conversation feedback and recognition once a quarter with every single team member, where we can give feedback to our team members, where they can give feedback to us. It's really encouraged, like the whole kind of culture of feedback. And the reason that feedback is so important is that's how you learn, right? Mm-hmm. And so you need the feedback to learn. And then if you learn quicker than everyone else, you win. So right people, right seats, and then a culture of feedback and constant learning, I think is a great recipe for success.
That's awesome. I'm making so many notes. I'm really liking that. I like that concept, learn quicker than everyone else, and that's where you're going to win. That is really, really awesome. What do you think for you sort of personally for you to play on your A game? Because I think to turn up every day and be a leader of such a high growth business going at such a pace, and not just that, during the, let's look at the past 4 years, it's been, you know, let's be honest, got to use the word shit show. It has been a shit show at points, and that's been demanding for all of us, you know, in different disguises, navigating the past few years. So for you to play on your A game and to turn up as the leader and setting that very clear example to your team and navigating through that growth, you know, what's been some of your non-negotiables that help you turn up and be on that A game?
Yeah, Abby, I don't always get it right. So I'm going to start with you got to be kind to yourself, because I don't always get it right. And if you ask my wife, she will be really honest with you and say I probably get it wrong more than I get it right. But okay, so what are those things? Look, I make sure I carve out time to meditate, exercise, and to learn something. So every day I wake up, I'm pretty focused on sort of routine, I suppose. I'm up at 5:30 every day. Between 5:30 and 6:30, I'm meditating, exercising, and I'm trying to learn something. So that happens every single day, Monday to Sunday. Even when I'm on holidays, we're in Greece for 4 weeks. I was doing it. My wife thinks I'm crazy. My kids are like, what, you're like, Dad, seriously, you know, get a life type of thing. But it's just something that I do. And if I don't actually do that, I'm not a very good human by about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So that would have to be the, you know, non-negotiable, is doing that every day. Meditate, exercise, learn something.
Okay, so I've got to ask, I'm really curious on this. Is there a particular type of meditation that you follow?
No, I hate, I struggle with like chanting and things like that. So I don't even know the different types of meditation, but I'll tell you what I do. So the first thing I do is I breathe in for 4 and out for 6. And I do that until I get some clarity in my head. The second thing I do is I sit there and I sit by the water. We live in fresh water in Sydney. I sit by the water and I try to pick 10 sounds. That's a wave, that's a bird, that's someone walking, that's air going in my ear, whatever those 10 sounds are. So I do that. The third thing I do is I go through my values. I've got kind of 8 values that I think a lot about. Bravery, commitment, honesty, humility, humor, compassion, passion, and love. And then I kind of feel those things. I try to kind of feel them and what they mean. And then I go through things that I'm grateful for. So it's my wife and my kids, good job, friends and family, that I can see the sunrise, and just try to pick those things that I'm really grateful for. And that's what I do. And typically that takes 15 to 20 minutes. And the difference, that 5 minute difference, is really is at the start. Sometimes I struggle to get clarity in my head, so it may take an extra 5 minutes. So 15 to 20 minutes, and that's sort of the meditation routine.
That is so interesting. It's so... have you followed Hal Elrod's work around Miracle Morning? And he looks at how, you know, a lot of that morning routine, how it sets people up for success. And it's really fascinating to speak to people and understand their morning routine. It's really interesting.
No, I haven't read that one. There's another one, though. It's the 5 a.m. club.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's about, yeah, setting yourself up for success, but getting up at 5 a.m., I'm going to start the 5:30 a.m. club, because 5 a.m. is too early for me.
See, I feel like I'm in a different 5 a.m. club. I'm in the 5 a.m. club with a three-year-old who doesn't sleep and wakes up. I'm in that 5 a.m. club.
Yeah, that's a different 5 a.m. club. Hopefully you'll get out of that 5 a.m. club at some stage. And normally that 5 a.m. club does start with a coffee, or maybe it finishes with a coffee after you've been woken up anyway.
Yeah, and then I'll join your 5:30 club because that one sounds like a more appealing club for me. So I'll look to join your club.
You're more than welcome, Abby. Join.
Thank you. Well, I'm actually not that far from you, so there you go. I'm curious on another note, actually. I was looking at your LinkedIn, and when I was reading your bio and various things on your LinkedIn, I saw around one of your specialties was getting stuff done. And I was like, I love that because I'm all about the getting stuff done. I'm really passionate about that because I think there's no shortage of good ideas. There's no shortage of great strategies, but where it typically falls down is the execution. And, you know, clearly the journey you guys have been on, you're obviously very good at getting stuff done. What for you are some of your keys for getting stuff done? How do you get stuff done? What's your go-to?
I don't know. I've just got kind of like this. Maybe I'm ADD. I don't know. I need to do stuff. Right? I need to do stuff. And then I couple that with, if I say I'm going to do something, I have to do it. And if I don't do it, I really struggle to sleep at night. So I tend to find myself saying that I'm going to do a bunch of things. And then because I've said I'm going to do them, I have to do them, because if I don't, I can't deal with myself. So then it's just like this revolving thing. I'm going to do this, 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 and this. And because I've said it, I've got to do it. And then, that's really it. I kind of, if I say I'm going to do it, and my kids will tell me about it all the time as well. And I said, Dad, you said you'd do it. And I like, they know if they say that to me that I will do it. And sometimes my wife isn't happy with me because I'll say, hey, you know, you do this and we're going to go get an ice cream. And they do it and then we're going to get ice cream, but we get an ice cream before dinner. So that doesn't go down very well. So, I think that's, for me, that's it. I don't know. I get super excited about stuff. I say I'm going to do it. And then because I'm committed, I have to do it. Just becomes a bit of a vicious cycle.
I like it though. You're putting yourself on the hook and then you're accountable to it, whether that be the business side of things or the ice cream. And the kids never forget.
They don't. And I think I do that because I think maybe innately I'm lazy. Like if I don't do that, I'd just like hang at the beach. I like, you know, if I didn't have to work, I'd probably just hang at the beach. I'm not even a very good surfer, but I just enjoy the beach.
Yeah. I'm a Brit, so clearly, you know, all of us Brits move here for the beaches. So I agree with
love
you.
Love the beaches. Yeah.
I know. We're all about the beaches. So I want to change tact with you and focus on what you're seeing working in sales right now. I think sales has seen a massive transition over the past couple of years. I almost hate saying that because it sounds really cliche because everyone's always saying, oh, you know, it's really changed. But I do think there's been a fundamental change with the past couple of years in terms of how we sell and what's working now versus what worked 5 years ago. What are you seeing from your lens and what opportunities are you seeing emerge out of that?
Yeah, so I guess we're a B2B tech business, right? So our customers are mainly brands. You know, some of the customers that we have, like, you know, Westpac, Coles, Woolworths, Canva, Disney Plus, Adidas, Reebok. So they're kind of brands, Binge. And what we've found is that our most successful strategies are going deep and long with relevant verticals, and then partnering with like events, you know, talking engagements around those events, building content relevant to those verticals, and building relationships over time. So there's not like an immediate return on investment when you think of it in that way. But what we've seen is kind of that 10x, 20x. Return over time. I think content is really important there, as well as like leveraging our current customers that are advocates and will join us on stage, will, you know, write testimonials, we'll speak to prospective customers about what it's like working with impact.com. So I think that takes time to get those advocates, but when you do, is like really leverage them as sort of those super fans or the influencers, right? They're That's what they kind of become. And then, you know, I think about some of the things that haven't worked, and maybe we just haven't got it right, but we've always struggled with cold outreach, cold calls. We've always struggled with, you know, cold emails and cold DMs and things like that. So try to think about, you know, the marketing and sales kind of working together. Think about it from a long term, and then going deep with various kind of verticals that make sense, and associations in those verticals and events in those verticals. That's where we've had our best success.
That's interesting, because we're seeing a lot right now around what you said about verticals, but not just verticals, but really deep and niche within that. Like, we looked at one thing that was aged care, and even just within aged care, it wasn't healthcare, it was aged care. And even within aged care, it wasn't just that. It was then, well, is it not for profits in aged care, or is it for profits in aged care? Because the for profits are going, well, no, we're not the same as the not for profits, and vice versa. So it was like, I think it's interesting you've mentioned that vertical piece, because that's where we're also seeing the success, where it's really niche and people go, yeah, we understand your world. And, you know, it's not all things to all people.
Yeah. And I think maybe another way to think about it as well, Abby, is like the commute, like creating that community around the vertical. So, or being, sorry, maybe even being part of that community and being like part of the fabric in that community. So it's not just like a dive in, kind of dive out, or put your toe in and sort of come out. It's like, okay, how can you actually really become partners with that vertical, and, you know, do it over a long period of time? So everyone within that vertical is talking about your brand or your product or your service as someone they trust, and someone that's really added value to their business, and that you're gonna be there for the long term. Not that, you know, you're not just going to say, hi, give me your money and go. It's like, no, you want to help build value over a long period of time in that community. I think that might be another way to think about it.
I like that. And we're sort of noticing it's a very slow shift, but a shift where people previously would go, right, we're going to do healthcare this quarter, and next quarter we're going to do education, and the next quarter we're going to do whatever. We're starting to actually see exactly what you're talking to, which is no, we can't just turn up and love them for one quarter. We've got to have the longevity to it. And like you said several times, play the long-term game and become part of the family. So I really like that you've touched on that a few times, because we've seen a difference actually when people have been able to adapt to that and that long-term game, not the quarterly focus that historically, particularly in some of the sectors we work in, people have been driven and bound to.
Yeah, I say community, not family, and I'll tell you why. Actually, I use the word tribe and team as well, not family. You know how some people will say you know, my business, or we're a great family, and you know, join our family, our business. I actually don't like using that term, and I'll tell you why. Because when you think about family, your mum, your dad, your brother and sister, you tend to accept their poor behaviours, right? Oh, that's just dad, or that's just mum when they behave poorly. But in a team, in a community, in a tribe, you don't accept those poor behaviours. So it's something I always just find kind of interesting. And whenever I hear anyone say, oh, our family, this company is our family, it makes me feel like, oh, really? Like, do you accept poor behaviours? Because that's what you do in a family. Anyway, I just thought you might like
that. And it's a shame, because you can't often divorce your family. You know, you can leave an organization, but you can't often, you know, divorce your family. You're stuck with them.
I know. This is true.
This is true. So you spoke a couple of times there. I just want to go back a sec. You spoke a couple of times there around content, and several times you mentioned content. Are you seeing any themes there around, you know, anyone can produce content, but there's a big difference between great content and content that people want to consume, engage with, and can't get enough of, and then content for the sake of content. So are you seeing themes there around what is working in terms of content?
Yeah, I like infotainment. So information that's entertaining. Yeah. And I think that's what I've seen kind of resonates. It's the boring stuff, the, you know, the white papers that are 50 pages and just filled with words and a few pictures and those sort of things, they don't really work, right? They just don't, in my view. It's the thing where you're going, okay, who's our audience? How are we going to engage them, entertain them, and inform them at the same time? It's that stuff that works. It's stuff that you get, that you watch, or that you interact with, that you go, how good is this? And you sort of pass it on to someone else within your organization. That's what works. And that's what you've got to kind of aim for, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. And we're starting to see more of that because we're starting to see some businesses, it's only slowly starting, I'd say, but some businesses are adopting, you know, how do we have a Netflix kind of approach? I know Salesforce have looked at stuff like that. And yeah, providing that entertainment factor, educating as they go, but it is that entertaining way to engage and consume and educate with a brand. Love that.
Infotainment, Abby.
Infotainment. I actually wrote it down. If anyone's watching on video, I actually wrote down infotainment. I've got a lot of notes, and that's a good one. I wrote that down as a mark. Going back again to another point you made, you mentioned around sales and marketing coming together, which is a topic very close to my heart. How do you bring together sales and marketing, and how are you approaching that?
That's a great question. So we have a sales team and we have kind of a marketing team. So they are two different areas of our business. But how we bring them together is that we have key customers that we're already working with that are key customers. And we have a target list of prospective customers that's shared between both our sales and marketing team. So when we're thinking about content and outreach, when we're thinking about events, and we're thinking about if they're a prospective customer, how do we get in front of them? How do we engage them? How do we use invitations to events? How do we use lists of content to go out with them? Then how do we have salespeople kind of follow up with them? It's getting aligned from both parts of the business on who it makes sense for us to do business with, and then having a plan on how we're going to engage those prospective customers or current customers over a period of time. I come back to that long-term thing, right? Playing the long game. It's not just like, you know, hitting them with 10 phone calls and hoping they're going to respond. It's like, what is the actual campaign to engage them over a long period of time? How do you invite them to an event, send them some content, follow up with a call, were they happy with that event, introduce them to a customer, and do that over a long period of time? That takes the sales team and the marketing team working together.
So do you have, I love that, do you have a sales leadership and a marketing leadership that both report up into you, so you come under one roof?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny that we often see, I think the latest research I saw out of LinkedIn was 9 out of 10 sales and marketing professionals don't feel there's an alignment between KPIs, culture, and so on. And a lot of the time they're sitting under different roofs and then reporting to different definitions of success. So I love how you've brought everyone together, even down to, right, these are the list of customers that we're working with and how we play in the long-term game for those.
Totally. I don't think there's any other way that you can really run it successfully, to be honest.
Yeah. So I want to change tact on you again, because I've got to ask you about this. I know that you also do quite a bit of charitable work, and I know that you've done stuff around, I think it's Undoing Youth Disadvantage, if I've got the name right. And I'd love to hear a little bit about what you're doing there.
Yeah, so I think you're referring to Unlimited, which is... Undoing Youth Disadvantage is probably more the tagline, but yeah, Unlimited. So I've been part of that organization from the start, a bit over 16 years, I think. It started off as Mayday, which is Media Assisting Youth. And then over time, it's kind of evolved. At the start, we had zero bank accounts, zero cost organization. We were channeling funds, basically. We were like getting Channel 10 to donate a media package of $50,000, and then we'd auction that off to Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola, instead of giving us $50,000, would say, write that $50,000 check out to youth off the streets. And so we were like channeling all these funds. And the first year we did it, we raised like $300,000. The second year we did it, we raised $700,000. Third year we did it, we raised $1.1 million. And we're like, oh my goodness, we got to have a formal organization because this could go horribly wrong. So we built a formal organization, got a board, did all the things that you need to do to get set up. And that's evolved over the last sort of 16 years to what it is today, which is Unlimited, which is the media marketing, advertising, creative tech industry foundation or social purpose organization that supports charities, and they're youth charities. Things like, we'll raise money for those youth charities. We'll put We'll put executives into those charities to help them build kind of sustainable businesses. We'll work with the media marketing creative industries on helping those media marketing creative industries build social purpose in their own businesses, run events to engage media marketing, tech, creative industry. So that's been a big part of my journey. Now I just sit on the board. At the start, I was rolling my sleeves up and getting a lot done, but now I'm just a kind of a board director. We've raised in value a bit over $100 million in that 16 years. So yeah, it's been really cool to be a part of and add value where I can.
Is there a common theme around building a successful charity versus building a successful business, or do you see them as very different?
That's a great question. I think there is a common theme. I think, you talk about startups, there's nothing, I think, harder than to start up a charity and then really drive a charity over a long period of time to success. And you learn a lot, right? You learn a lot. You've got to do all the skills, all the things that you have to do in a profitable and in a for-profit business. You've got to do it in a not-for-profit business. And typically it's harder because you actually don't have any money. I think there is skills in parallel. You need sales, you kind of need marketing, you need operations, you need finance. You need to be able to set a plan and deliver on that plan. You need to engage with customers. You need to build a team. So yeah, all those things, I think they run in parallel for sure.
I've not tried the charity path yet, but it sounds like you've definitely had your handful scaling and building both at the same time. So I'm pretty impressed by that. I want to finish with.
I'll just go back to right people, right seats. I'm very low touch on it. Like we got a great CEO, Chris Friel, and a great team that really run it. And I'm just more directional now, right, from a board perspective. So right people, right seats, Abby.
Still got your hands dirty at the start, and that's the hard bit, is getting it off the mark and getting that momentum and getting it moving. So I still take my hat off to that. I want to circle back to, I always finish with the same question around if there's a business book that's really influenced you, but I kind of want to expand on that, because you mentioned earlier that every morning you'll make sure that you're doing some element of learning. So I kind of want to expand on that, is in terms of what learning and books you think have been really critical, and your thoughts and recommendations around that, because I'm a bit of a learning junkie and a bit of a book junkie, so I'm ready to take down notes for what's been highly valuable for you and you think influential.
What I'm going to do after this podcast is I'm going to share you my life learnings, right? So I'm going to share it with you. And it's just a whole bunch of stuff I've written down over time. And that's from like books. It's from stuff I've learned along the way. I'm going to just share it with you. I think you might find it interesting or not. I'll just share it with you. You can't share it with the audience. Okay. I'll share it with you. Okay. So yeah, that's just like from different bits and pieces along the way. A couple of books that influenced my thinking. This is a hard one, actually. Atomic Habits is a pretty good one. James Clear.
Yes, love that.
So building great habits and breaking bad ones, just from like starting really small. I think that's there's some good lessons in that. If you want to run a marathon, don't just get up and run a marathon. Maybe just get up and walk to the fridge as day number one, but just like get out of bed at the time that you need to train. So it's like, start really small and then create those habits. I think that's a really good one. Another one I really like, it's Conscious Business, Fred Kaufman. So Conscious Business is about creating value in business through values. So organizations that have really strong kind of values and how they think about creating value with their customers through the values they have as an organization. So Conscious Business, I think it really resonates with me, and I think about it a fair bit in decisions that I make.
So I'm curious, you mentioned there around your learning. So have you documented, like in some master big document, all of your learning? Like, what's your process there? I'm fascinated.
Okay, so we've got a video going here, don't we? So let me just quickly show you. In my notes, life learnings. See on my phone?
Oh my gosh. So you document and note it all down on all of your notes?
Yeah. That's it.
That's Incredible. I used to do it very much pen and paper. I like pen and paper, and I like writing it down, and it's almost like journaling through something and then thinking about how I can apply it. But then you go through all these books that you then, you know, just haven't got anywhere. So now I'm trying to OneNote it and keep everything in OneNote, and then I can refer easily. But that's not been the best either. So I'm curious about your learning system.
I'll just, as soon as I think of it or learn it or read it, I just write it in my life learnings. If it can't be everything, it just needs to be like that gem. It's like, oh, okay, right, you know. Oh, and sometimes I write things in it. If I've had a conversation with my wife and I'll learn something about myself, or had a conversation with a friend, or learn how I respond to a certain situation, I'll be like, yeah, Adam, don't be such a dickhead in this situation. Right. Okay.
Oh, wow. Now I can't wait to move to life learnings. Is there something that sticks with you more than others that you know, sometimes you just keep on going back to a point and you keep going back to it. Is there any of the life learnings that really stand out for you? Is like, yep, I always circle back to these couple.
Focus on what you can control.
Yeah. That's a brilliant one. Particularly over the past couple of years.
Totally. You can always control something in any situation. And it's just focusing on what you can control. When you aren't focusing on that, it tends to breed stress, anxiety. So focus on what you can control. And the other thing that I've learned, I've got to say to myself, is don't be a preacher, because I like learn all this stuff. I want to like tell people. And sometimes I tell people in the wrong situations. And I get called out on it, particularly by my very vocal wife and two beautiful daughters, where they'd be, stop being a preacher, Dad. I'm like, okay, you're right. You're right, actually. Thank you. I'll put that down in my learning, stop being a preacher.
Oh, I might have to do that. I think I drive my team nuts because I turn up every day and I'm like, I just read this book. It was the best book. It's like my favorite book. And they're like, Abby, yesterday, the other one was your favorite book. So that's your favorite book today? Yep, that's my favorite book today. And tomorrow it'll be something different. Yeah, it's addictive though. I'm addicted to, like, I love it. So, okay, I feel like I've found my fellow learning junkie.
Okay, it's the 5:30 club. 5:30 club. It's a new club. Right, we're on.
That's my goal out of this, is to get out of my current 5 a.m. 3-year-old club and to get into the 5:30 Adams club. That's my clear goal out of this podcast.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. Look, Adam, you have been incredible. I now understand why the team was so excited, and you have absolutely lived up to all of the talk that's been going on in our office about having you on. Thank you so much. I personally have made loads of notes and got loads out of that and really, really enjoyed it. If people want to connect with you, where's the best place other than coming and attacking you at Freshwater Beach? Anywhere to connect with you?
Look, probably LinkedIn, whack Adam Finesse. Into LinkedIn and shoot me a note. I'm the one at impact.com, not the one at Atlassian. I found there's another Adam Finesse at Atlassian, so I'm the impact.com guy.
Okay, we will put a link in the show notes just so we make sure you're connecting with the right Adam, and we'll put a link to impact.com as well so that you can go and check it out. Adam, thank you so much. You have been such an incredible guest.
Yeah, my pleasure, Abby. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to receive the inside scoop on what is working right now in our highest performing campaigns, and likewise, what are the pitfalls to avoid directly to your inbox, then simply visit insidescoop.salesredefined.com.au to make sure that you receive our fortnightly newsletter with everything that you need to know to stay ahead of the pack directly to your inbox. And finally, before you leave us, don't forget to subscribe to Redefining Sales Podcast so that you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed it, we would really, really appreciate it if you could leave us a comment or perhaps share it with a friend or colleague who you know would enjoy it. We'll see you next time. If you do, I wanna hear you go.